things today, and I think we're ready for any additional questions.
Okay, Robin, we have quite a few, and I forwarded some for you to look over, but in the meantime, let me ask some of the questions that are coming in. A number of them are asking about how to make the determination about whether when you would use the baseload emissions factors versus the non-baseload emission rates. One gentleman has actually provided this very lengthy and specific example, but for instance, on the case study that you provided here, where you're looking at the LED lights and the reductions coming from that, can you explain a little bit more of the rationale behind why you did not use the base load, or you don't think it affects base load emissions?
That's a good question. The reason why we used the non-base load emission rates is because it's more likely that the change in lighting will affect non-baseload generators.
So it's, you know, what the reductions aren't so continuous over all hours that baseload plants would be affected?
Basically the you have a choice of the total output emission rate, which is the whole system mix. And in that system mix, there are some, you know, there's a certain amount of baseload generation. There's generation that's happening, basically no matter what kind of variations in electricity load are happening. There's a minimum amount of load out there that's happening. All those generators are operating. And pretty much the rationale, I presume, is that these changes and efficiency, the new efficiency, is going to affect more of the non-baseload facilities and less of these baseload facilities, and that's why things got weighted that way, and that's how the non-baseload emission rate in EGRID is set up as basically a deep marginal emission rate, looking at what's happening at the margin, and is basically any nuclear plants that are running are going to keep on out. Putting their output, no matter what's happening on the demand side.
And also, it's just such a small amount of change that it wouldn't go deep enough to affect any of the baseload plants.
Thanks for that. Another question was whether or not the data is available at a county level. You gave an example in this last local area, and again, someone in our participant group is apparently in that area and said that's basically the greater Philadelphia area, your last example?
Right.
Well, some of the other participants are wondering if you can break it down to the county level if need be.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can start with consumption that's taking place at anywhere, a particular building, a group of buildings, a city, a county, a state. One thing that we recommend is, you know, just because you use, you know, energy in a county doesn't mean that all the electricity is coming from there. So that's, again, why we, quick and dirty estimate, why we recommend going to the EGRID subregion level of your county. So if you don't know your EGRID subregion, go ahead and use Power Profiler, put in a zip code and pick a utility, and you'll find out what your EGRID subregion is.
Okay, thank you. Another question asks whether or not you have some advice about one of the limitations you mentioned. You mentioned that you can't, even with the capacity factor approach, necessarily assume that some of that power isn't exported out of the region. One of the participants wonders that, for instance, even after you've implemented an energy efficiency program and you have a savings from that, how do you know that that power isn't then going to be exported to or provided to a municipal government contract or something else? So Is there any advice you have about how to control for those types of limitations?
I think these are estimates, and there are some limitations there. If you want to really get into the details, there are a lot more complicated ways of putting this together. There are dispatch models that will account for things like that. Short of doing some really expensive analysis, this is kind of an easier and cheaper way of doing that that gets you hopefully to a pretty close answer or answer that is close to what you would have gotten if you spent a lot more resources on a more rigorous analysis.
I wonder, Robin, if you could take a look at Dave Alloway's question. He has a specific case study he's asking for your advice on. And maybe in the meantime, Art, I have a question that goes back to some of your presentation materials. One was you noted that there was gaps in the data. In other words, you aren't covering every single year. You have some years that you've skipped. Can you just explain why?
I can explain. Year 2006, EIA didn't collect some data, and it made it really difficult for us to actually do anything with it. And so we had 2007 data ready to go, and I made the decision that it's better to go with the more recent year of data and start working on that than to fret over your 2006 data, which was missing a bunch of information from the EIA. So kind of made the decision to go ahead on that. I think for the years 2001, 2002, and 2003, that was before my tenure, I understand there were some data issues that happened. Not exactly sure why those years didn't happen, but if you're really looking at some detailed plan information, you can go ahead to the KMD website and the EIA site, and if you're only looking at a few plants, you might be able to filter out what you need from there.
Okay. Another participant is having problems separating the combined cycle generation from the boiler generation and would like to know if you have advice on how to handle that through the eGrid data.
Okay, combined cycle versus boiler generator.
Combined heating power, perhaps?
Yeah, there's a combined cycle system is where there's generally a combustion turbine and a heat recovery steam generator and an additional steam turbine. So those are reported different ways in EPA, in CAMD, and also in EIA. I think EIA will generally, from combined cycle systems, they'll have they have information on the prime mover level, prime mover fuel level in the 906-920. I think combined cycle systems, they'll have CC as the code for the combustion turbine part of a combined cycle, and CA is the steam generation that happens there. And so they'll list the different prime movers. So that's where it gets really tricky with eGrid is when we're trying to combine the information from different data sets together and try to match them up. And sometimes we see some mismatches and we're like, okay, are those really the same unit, or are those, you know, do they have different prime movers listed? Are they two units? Are they the same unit? So, yeah, it does get very tricky. And check the prime mover codes. And if you need help navigating the CAMD data, feel free to give me a call or send me an email, and I might be able to help you identify what kind of prime movers there are for different units in the acid rain program.
Hey, Catherine, I can answer the question from David Holloway.
Okay, you want me to just read it, or you can paraphrase it?
Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you do that for the group?
Okay. Well, David's asking if about a particular kind of situation. He says, consider a case where a municipal utility has a different, specifically a lower greenhouse gas generation mix than their sub-region. For instance, they were getting more of their power from hydro. Using the sub-region greenhouse gas rate doesn't really acknowledge the utility's decision to purchase from lower greenhouse gases, but using the utility-specific greenhouse gas rate would send a potentially misleading message that their electricity purchases are low carbon and we don't need to reduce use. So do you have advice for us on how to move forward? Do you use both some average? What approach?
Yeah, so one way that this community could move forward is, you know, if you have utility calculated data for a specific plant and their purchases, then you can use that to show how you are to show how what the greenhouse gas impact is from your purchases and generation in your community for your municipal power plant. Most communities don't have that type of information, and they don't have resources to get that. So that's when we recommend using the EGRID. You know, that's the time where you would use the EGRID subregion emissions rate. And in terms of the perception of not needing to reduce your electricity consumption because you have low carbon generation, there are a number of different benefits that I think would resonate with people to get them to change their behavior and be more efficient in their energy use. I mean, you could talk about lowering your electricity bills if you use less electricity. You're also avoiding cost of new generation that could come down the line in the future. And we even have in our assessing the multiple benefits of clean energy resource, we talk about how certain clean energy policies can save or create jobs. So that's another factor that could be communicated. So those are some ways maybe that will help him in his question.
Thank you very much. Well, we're at the end of the hour, and we're also just about out of questions. We've covered most of the questions. And I just want to remind people that the contact information for both Art and Robin has been posted on the website that also has their presentation materials. So if you have specific questions, they've agreed to, I think we have both their phone number and their email so that you can get in touch with them directly, and they'll be happy to follow up with you. So with that, we're going to close this session, and just a reminder that you will receive the survey questions at the end. If you can just take, there's only a few short questions. It won't take you more than 5 minutes, so it would be very helpful in planning the next three sessions that are going to be on multiple benefits, and we'd appreciate your input. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you again next month.
This concludes today's U.S. EPA State and Local Climate and Energy Technical Forum conference call.